Hockey PDO Cast. My name is Dmitry Filipovich, and joining me is my good buddy Chad Dieteman. This is Chad. What's going on, man?
Hey, man. How are you once again?
I'm good. We're doing a little change of pace. I feel like I've been so preoccupied with the postseason and watching all these games and breaking down the X's and O's and them, and we're kind of doing a more of an off-season show here in the midst of it. But I guess for you, you're used to this, obviously, on an annual basis now, having covered the Sabres for this long, but also you've been kind of deep in it for weeks now with off-season stuff.
Yeah, it's just every day you wake up and think of new Jack Eichel trade ideas. That's what we do around here in Buffalo until it actually happens.
Well, that's what we're doing here in the PDO cast too. So that's the plan. So initially we're going to save this one for the off-season, but I figure with the amount of smoke that's out there right now, we decided to just sort of fast track it and do it now while we still can. And hopefully it can serve as kind of a trade primer to prep people. And then whenever the trade does happen, we can reconvene and do an emergency reaction podcast. But I thought it'd be fun to bounce around some ideas. So the plan for today's show is we're going to do everything we can to prepare people for that Jack Eichel trade, from what the Sabres should be targeting and what they could reasonably expect to get, to who's interested, what the market's like, what the best fits are, what those teams are getting from Jack Eichel himself. So we were bouncing around some ideas, and I thought that the best way to start this would be kind of doing sort of a backstory in terms of how we got to this place, in terms of setting the scene by like where things went wrong for both Eichel and the Sabres, how it devolved to a point where it seems, like a matter of time before he gets traded. It seems unfathomable to imagine him ever playing again in a Sabres uniform. And it's surreal in the sense that it escalated very quickly, but also it's not like it came out of nowhere, because this has been something that it feels like it's been percolating for a couple of years now, at least.
Yeah, it's really where to begin. I think, you know, if you want to go all the way back, I think this whole process started, may not be melodramatic, but you know, the day that they traded Ryan O'Reilly, I think that's kind of what started this entire process. And I think it got kicked into high gear last year, when Eichel had his comments about, you know, being frustrated and wanting to win. He's been here for so long. And then, you know, they fired the general manager on another change. And then they, you know, the coach that he liked, at least he liked to start the season, ends up getting fired. So, you know, there's a lot there in the recent history, but I think it really goes back to that O'Reilly trade. You know, that's kind of, you know, for all the rumors that those two get along, that was completely false. You know, O'Reilly and Eichel are pretty close still to this day. So, you know, he sees one of his best friends leave the team. They get a poor return out of it. He goes and wins the Stanley Cup the next year. And then if you want it, one of his best friends on the team, Zach Bogosian, leaves the team last year, goes to Tampa Bay, wins a Stanley Cup. So, you know, he's watching two of his close friends in the league leave this team, go somewhere else, and instantly win. So,
two equally good hockey players, Zach Bogosian and Ryan O'Reilly.
Right. Different scenarios, different, you know, situations, but still, nonetheless,
yeah.
You see two of your close friends leave and win, you're like, oh, wait a minute, what's kind of, you know, maybe I really do need to get out of here quicker than I thought. Because I think at the end of the day, Eichel and his side and his agent, you know, wanted to wait for that no-movement clause kicked in next year. But the injury fast-tracked it. And I think to an extent, too, the Sabres aren't blameless in this, in the sense that although Eichel wants out the door, I think we've been naive to sit here and think that the Sabres, at least under Kevin Adams, kind of themselves, aren't ready to kind of go in a new direction here.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many ways to take this. When thinking about the Jack Eichel era in Buffalo, it spans 6 years, I guess, if you want to include this most recent one, which was obviously very abbreviated. But yeah. I've got some stats for you over that time, which I'm sure you're all readily aware of already. But just to kind of help contextualize the past 6 years, 171 wins for the Sabres in 453 games, to put that into some perspective. Vegas has two more wins than that, and they didn't even exist for the first 2 years of Jack Eichel's career. They've gone through four head coaches, I guess. Technically, he didn't play any games while Don Granato was the head coach this season, because he had already been out by that point. But over these past 6 years, you could say they've had four different head coaches with him on the ice at 5-on-5. They have a minus 23 goal differential in 5,700 minutes, which, you know, obviously isn't great. But when you look at it compared to the fact that when he's been off the ice in these 6 years in 5-on-5 minutes, minus 176 goal differential in 16,500 minutes, which includes a 1.8 goals for per 60, which is horrendously bad, obviously, and speaks to the issue. And I think that's, you know, when you're trying to kind of assign blame or where things went wrong or why these 6 years have been such a mess, obviously no one is blameless. There's certainly enough blame to go around, but I always think back to, you know, how they got Eichel in the first place in terms of embracing a full teardown and real sort of openly tanking the way we've never really seen an NHL before for those 2 years. And it worked out in the sense that they got two second overall picks in Sam Reinhart and Jack Eichel, who have been their two best players. So in that sense, it did work out. But also at the same time, they brought these guys in with really no infrastructure to speak of in terms of putting them in a position to succeed and having complementary talent around them that fit the timelines to grow and actually create a good contending team there. And so that's kind of the issue for me, where it's like, yeah, on the one hand, when you're making $10 million per season and you want to be considered one of the best handful of centers in the league, which he certainly played up to that standard the last time we saw him fully healthy in 2019-20, you should be able to be on a winning team. But on the other hand, it's really difficult to look at the situation that's been around him and say, all right, well, this proves that Jack Eichel can't win because the Sabres team didn't win because it was just such a mess around him.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's really the crux of it. I mean, you know, there's always been the tank versus anti-tank debate here that seems to never go away. Maybe when Eichel is traded, it finally will go away, because in 2021, we're still having the debate. But, you know, people will say who were against the tank that, see, it didn't work all along. Really, that's not true. It was actually very successful in the goal of getting, like you mentioned, Reinhart and Eichel, but just everything else after that failed miserably. Multiple GMs, multiple coaches, and the one constant of ownership, all carry blame in that. They never put a team around them. There's always flaws with this team. There was always something. They couldn't get out of their own way. And I think from day one, they kind of set this up just poorly. You know, like you said, bringing him in here, I just didn't have the infrastructure. I mean, when you had a guy, you know, grow up, you know, around, you know, Evander Kane was one of the guys he leaned on, and that's, and I'm not trying to take a shot at Evander Kane or anything, but I mean, that's, you know, not a guy known for his great leadership in the room and kind of somebody you want your franchise player to grow up and lean on. You know, I think they didn't have those leaders in the room early. You know, they had Brian Gianza there, but, you know, that was only for one season.
They just didn't have enough good players.
That too, yeah.
It's like, it's not a culture. I mean, yeah, you can say culture or whatever. I think it's, they just didn't, like, if you look at those rosters, like, they had some good players.
Terrible.
But it's not nearly good enough.
It was never depth. They always had that top heavy. That's where they always were. You know, they had Skinner. It's top heavy. They have that one line. Eichel and Reinhart, you know, that might be the most frustrating thing in the world, is all this time. A lot of us, including myself, were just saying, just split up Eichel and Reinhart. They always had to play together. And then we saw what Reinhart can do playing center away from Eichel. And all this time, your answer to your number two center was right there when O'Reilly wasn't on the team. Like, the answer was right there. It makes it more frustrating. And now that we know Reinhart can play the position, he might be traded. It's just, like I said, the whole thing is, this team can just never get out of its own way, off the ice, on the ice. They always just find ways to step in it. And that's where they are, find themselves now in this offseason.
I've given a lot of thought to the idea of, like, whether over these 6 years they've done right by him in the sense of putting him into that position to succeed, in terms of, like, surrounding him with enough players to at least give him a chance. And on the one hand, I feel like they did make an effort to do so, because just at least in terms of, like, the resources they've committed to it over the years, where they went out and they threw $42 million at Kyle Okposo in free agency. Mm-hmm. I think after Eichel's first season, they gave, you know, they traded for Jeff Skinner. He scored 40 goals playing next to him. They gave him $72 million. As you alluded to earlier, they kept for whatever reason, Reinhart glued to him on his wing instead of just bumping him back and giving him a second center, so they had more depth, and so teams couldn't just key in on that one line. They, you know, invested a high pick, you want to say, and Alex Nylander. Like, they were always in this pursuit of getting wingers that could play with them and that could be top line guys. And so that's to say, I guess, that it's not like they were necessarily like sitting on their hands and not trying to surround him with talent. It just seems like every step of the way, sort of from a process perspective, it was kind of misguided. And clearly the way, like, you know, they ran their business and allocated their resources wasn't optimal.
Yeah. I mean, look at the Taylor Hall signing, that video, that now infamous video with Terry Pegula talking about after they're, you know, if we get Taylor Hall, this shows we're competing for a Stanley Cup now. Like, dude, what? Like, but that was the mindset, though, is, oh, we got Jeff Skinner, we're going to be good now. Oh, we got Kyle Poso, we'll be good now. We got Taylor Hall, we'll be good now. Like, okay, yeah, but you're still a top line team. You forgot about the rest of your roster. And that gets into the drafting of Nylander ending up poorly. You know, middle stat, you know, not really hitting kind of his ceiling. I mean, I know he turned it around this year, but just so much. Yeah, you got the guy to play with Eichel. It was always find the guy to play with Eichel, but they forgot about everything else. And not to mention, you know, you had Ristolainen out here all these years who him and himself drags out a team. You never have consistent goaltending along the way. So, yeah, in a sense that, yeah, I mean, they went out and got a Vander Kane too a while ago, and they got O'Reilly when Eichel first got there. So they went out and got these. They always got the big guys. They just forgot about everything else. And for teams, it made it easy to be, okay, we'll just shut down the top line. And then, you know, you read the stats off. When Eichel's out on the ice, we'll just crush this team. And, you know, in hockey, that makes a difference because Eichel only plays, you know, less than a quarter of the game, if you will. So a third of the game. So, like, you know, just you're dominated the rest of the time.
Yeah, to be clear, they got a lot of the big guys. There's only one true big guy in Buffalo, and it's Rasmus Ristolainen. But so I guess the next sort of part of this conversation is what any team that is interested in Eichel, and we're going to list off the ones that are, and many should be at least doing their due diligence here, what you're getting from them at this point, right? Because I think it's fair to say that you can just throw away this past season. You know, clearly wasn't remotely healthy to begin with out of the gate, was playing through injuries. Obviously shot 3.3%. The team was just mired in this dreadful run. I don't think there's necessarily anything insightful to learn from it. Now, I guess the one caveat to that would be, you know, the reason why it feels like this has escalated between these two parties has been, which has obviously been much reported, the disagreement of opinion in terms of how to proceed with his recovery and injury treatment and how big of an issue that's going to be moving forward. And I think for any team that is thinking about investing serious resources into acquiring him, that's a real concern, because it feels like if you do acquire him, you're going to want to appease him in terms of letting him get the surgery that he wants to get. And then at that point, when are you even getting this theoretical version of Jack Eichel, the difference maker, into your lineup to help you win? Yeah. And if you're acquiring him, obviously it's a big picture view in the sense that he still has years left on his deal, and it's not like a, you know, 1 year thing and he's going to be a free agent and you're just trying to win a cup this coming year, but you want to have something to show for all of those assets you're going to invest into him right out of the gate.
Yeah. I mean, that really is the tricky part of all this, is the neck injury. It's, you know, it's what, the same time you have to figure out what's Eichel's end game too. Does he want to do a surgery? He plays for the Buffalo Sabres. Does his opinion change of what happens if he plays for the Anaheim Ducks?
Get some of that California sun.
Right. Yeah. Oh, look at my neck's better now. I don't need surgery anymore. You know, that kind of thing is the neck injury, which is something that I don't want to put it in Jack that he's just making excuses and just a guy of town, but he legitimately has a neck injury, but I wonder how much he's leaning into that to kind of push himself the rest of the way out the door, kind of to, in a sense, force a trade without literally asking to be traded. So I kind of wonder, you know, if he's moved, if his view on treatment changes, and maybe he's moved to a team that does let him get a surgery, and, you know, that's fine and dandy, and, you know, best of luck to that team that lets him do that. But yeah, that's the complication right now. I think the Sabres are going to run into, they'll definitely have their suitors. It's just who's willing to give up what, with that neck uncertainty out there.
Well, I was thinking, I'm curious how you think about this, because initially I was thinking, you know, it, the impetus, the trade and sort of the motivation, makes sense for the Sabres in regards to the fact that, you know, his new no move clause kicks in next summer. He's also going to be owed, I believe, a $7.5 million signing bonus next summer as well.
Yep.
And we know that the Sabres, based on their past dealings, would probably like to make this trade before that. And they don't want to keep this circus going into next season. So I was thinking, oh, you know, that kind of removes some of their leverage because teams know that they're pretty desperate to make the best move they can here now, but not necessarily wait this thing out. But then I had someone in the league bring up the sort of glass half full view, I guess, from a different lens, that in that, you know, if you're a team like the Ducks, who might not necessarily be a team that Jack Eichel would be on the top of his list, that is the number one destination for him, this is your chance to get him, because come next summer, once he does get full control over where he says he can play, you might not necessarily be a top landing spot for him. And so it gives you this kind of window to make this move now if you're the Ducks. So maybe that does give the Sabres some more leverage with regards to expanding the number of teams they can actually deal with.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely correct. I think that that's the right way to look at it. You know, it's, if he's still here next July 1st next year, I mean, if he can then ask for a trade and kick his feet up and say, New York, Boston, LA, have fun. That's the only place I'll wave to. And so, yeah, I mean, for teams like Anaheim, Minnesota, Columbus, you know, that want to, any other team that wants to get in on this, this is it. This is your opportunity. So in a sense, you know, there's a running clock for both sides, but the, you know, but the clock means more, I think, for the team trying to get in on this, in a sense, because I guess you could say it goes both ways, because the clock run out in the Sabres too, and then you get less of a return because he's dictating where he goes, right, and teams know they have you over a barrel. So really Adams has to play this smartly. You know, I think he, to start, it looks like he's done the right thing and he has zeroed in on a couple just desperate GMs, in particular Bob Murray in Anaheim, which is a smart play. So not only get a team that knows that they're not going to be on the list if he gets the next summer, but also a general manager that knows his time is wearing thin. He's on, you know, thin ice, if you will, you know, to make a trade and to put a winner on the ice. So I think he's at least, what it seems like, he's done a good job, you know, attacking those general managers. And you could even say Columbus is another situation like that.
I guess part of the tricky thing for me, beyond just the injury diagnosis or in terms of like what you're going to get from that moving forward, is trying to really hammer down what you're getting in terms of like a true talent contributor for Michael, right? Because obviously a fantastic player, and you have him for what, his age, 25 through 29 seasons at 10 million per, which would theoretically, I mean, you know, we can argue about the semantics of whether maybe he's already had his most productive seasons at age 22 to 24, or whether that's still to come for the rest of his 20s, but it's certainly not prohibitive where you're worrying about paying him 10 million into his 30s. Like, these are the years that you want an impact player for. But, you know, I think the first time we did a show, we discussed sort of this interesting statistical profile of his where he shoots 9.7% on his first 1,000 or so shots in his first four seasons. And he's kind of more of a volume shooter. And that's fine because he's very productive. He draws a ton of penalties. He generates a ton of shots and scoring chances. And he's obviously creating a lot for everyone around him. But then in 2019-20, he all of a sudden bumps up to an above average shooter where he's shooting almost 16%. He scores 36 goals in 68 games. He takes his game to an entirely different level in terms of, you know, his offensive production. And that might be the outlier here in the grand scheme of things, but it was always weird and tough to kind of reconcile that a player of his skill level and pedigree would just be a sub 10% shooter for the rest of his career. So it's kind of trying to figure out what you're going to get in that regard is also, I think, a very important question for any team that's acquiring him.
Yeah. And I think the thing too about Jack that I think is interesting when I was a player is I think he adjusts to who he's playing with. In the sense that when he played with Skinner, he knew who his line mates was and he became that, like we said, that volume shooter. And he was shooting more farther out and kind of shooting for rebounds because Skinner was that finisher around the net. Now, when the next season came along in 2019-20, when he didn't have Skinner and, you know, he was being relied upon more as a shooter, then sure, he turned that part of his game up. So really, I think it's, And it's one of the things that make him a, you know, a dynamic and an interesting player to have on your team is, you know, he can adjust his style to his linemates or his team. You know, he has the ability to take over a game and be, okay, I'll become the shooter now. Where there's more situations where it kind of gets frustrating at times where he will overpass, trying to be the playmaker, whether it be the power player five on five. So I think that's unique about him is he has the ability to change his game and be successful doing multiple things, depending on who his linemates are and the team he plays for and what he's asked to do. But yeah, at the same time, you know, it does add some, I don't want to say confusion to it, but does add some, you know, questions for the team acquiring him is, you know, what's a player am I going to get? Am I getting the playmaker or am I going to get the shooter? Am I going to get the guy who scored 36 goals? Or am I going to get the guy who scored 25, but had 40, 50 assists? So, you know, that's the kind of thing they have to break down. At the end of the day, I don't think it should matter because his offensive impacts doing both things are so good that at the end of the day, I don't think it really matters whether he's shooting it or he's having somebody else shoot the puck in, because either way, it's going in the net when he's on the ice. But yeah, I could see some general managers definitely, you know, having some questions about what player they're really getting.
No, I think it's a fair conversation because you're getting a good player regardless, but just in terms of trying to map out how to get the most out of him or what players you want to surround him with or whether he makes the most sense given the personnel you have. Right. I think it's important, especially given the acquisition cost and his salary. And so let's spin this then from the Sabres perspective, because I'm interested in the strategy from their end when it comes to how you approach this in terms of, you know, what you're trying to accomplish, what kind of assets you're specifically looking for. And we've already heard some news. I think it was Elliot Friedman on a radio hit where he was talking about how, you know, they seem to value this coming draft more than other teams around the league and feel like they can get a competitive edge there. And maybe, you know, they're already putting that out there because they feel like they're going to get another top pick in this draft, obviously. Yeah. And so I'm torn about that, right? Because I certainly am willing to consider that even though everyone considers this to be a relatively weak draft in the grand scheme of things, there's so much unknown. I'm sure that there's going to be a bunch of really, really high-end impact players that come from this draft. I think part of the uncertainty comes from wondering who they're going to be and where they're going to be picked. And that's kind of the precarious position, but I'm sure the talent is in there. But I'm not very confident that they are equipped to figure that out in terms of who that talent is and who they should acquire. It's a bit easier with the first overall pick, but if they're getting another top five pick or so, it's weird because I'm sure you also read that piece by I'm sorry if I'm butchering his name here, Lance Lisowski, I think at Buffalo News, and it painted a pretty grim image of, you know, this time last year when they made their organizational changes. And certainly they, it's no secret that they cut down pretty significantly in their scouting staff. And I thought they really made a mess of that eighth overall pick by taking Jack Quinn instead of a bunch of players that I would have preferred instead, whether it was Anton Lundell or Seth Jarvis even, or Marco Rossi, obviously. Yeah. And so I just think it's, they haven't really given us any reason to feel confident that approaching this trade as, all right, we want draft picks for this year, even high end ones, because we feel like that's where we're going to be able to get our difference makers. And we view those as premium assets. I just don't really have a lot of confidence that they're going to be able to turn those into the legitimate high end assets that you need to justify trading Jack Eichel for.
Yeah. Not to mention they have one of the smallest scouting staffs in the league. Still to this day, I mean, they've made some additions to it, but it's still relatively small. And, you know, that's concerning for how much, I think, legwork goes into the season, because you're relying a lot on video, you're relying a lot on numbers, if you will. And again, they have an analytics department of one, two, I guess, now, if you want to count Carmanos. So, you know, there's that aspect of it, too, if you're going to rely on the data standpoint, because there's just so much that this draft is uncommon. And if you're going to go ahead and spin it to me that, well, we think we can take advantage of this draft, well, I mean, you better be sure, because you have a small group and there's a lot of players that didn't play or played in weird leagues that rely on video, and you better make sure your data is right. And you told me last year that you relied on data and some video scouting, and you walked away with Jack Quinn over Marco Rossi and Anton Lundell. So your first test didn't go so well. So, I mean, you know, and then now there's the turnover too. So Jeremiah Crow kind of, in a sense, ran that draft last year. Well, now Jeremiah Crow flips over to the pro side and Jerry Fortin is now running the amateur side. And then you still have Jason Nightingale, who's the director of analytics, and also the assistant amateur director of amateur scouting. So, you know, there's that transition that's also going on here. And then now Carmanos is in the picture. So, you know, it's just a lot of changeover and a lot going on when you should be focused on, if you're really going to hit on this draft, you really need to be focused on it and you really need to be in depth and in the details and really be confident about your picks. And just all of this turnover, all of this change kind of concerns me to the point you're making that you don't know how much you can reliably trust on them. Now, if you have pick 1 and 3,
right,
that's pretty hard to mess up. But if you have pick 1 and 10, 11, then that 11 pick can kind of, don't mess that up, you know? So it's definitely worth questions, because this route last year, at least with the first pick, definitely didn't pass the test.
Yeah. I think above all else, you have to be identifying quality coming back, right? Like you need some sort of a premium asset, whether, you know, if it's with the Ducks, a third overall pick, or if you want to lump that in there, but it, like, you cannot afford another scenario where you're getting like 4, 5, 6 pieces back, but none of them actually amount to right. anything. And I think for me, that's whenever I'm trying to visualize any of these packages or sort of what you'd be targeting, I always lean towards, I'll take fewer assets in this regard, but make sure they're high quality ones, as opposed to just trying to get a bunch of late picks or something. Absolutely. Like that. I wonder how much you think because obviously, you know, Kevin Adams is relatively new, and so he doesn't necessarily bear the brunt of this, but I think from like a fan base perspective, and I guess from the ownership perspective, there is, on the one hand, you could view trading Jack Eichel here as kind of like a reset button or a fresh start, right? Because you're like, okay, we're gonna get rid of this guy who's been our star player for the past handful of years and makes the most money on our team. We're gonna get either a bunch of draft picks back or young prospects or players, and we're going to sell you on this kind of future hope. And a couple of years down the road, we're going to try to get this thing going again. But it's impossible, I think, to get that fresh start if you're the Sabres, because there is this organizational baggage of the past kind of decade of despair that's just looming over all of this, where it feels like after everything they went through to get Eichel in the first place, like, it's not just your conventional, oh, we're just going to trade away our best player because, you know, that's the right route to go. I think there needs to be a very clear kind of identifiable plan of, okay, what's going to happen after that beyond just this trade, to make it all kind of make sense and to make people feel like it's not just going to be another 6 years now of kind of the same thing all over again.
Yeah. And I think it's one of the things Kevin Adams to this point hasn't really done. Now, we might get a sense of what direction is going down with the return of the Eichel trade, but we don't know. You know, that's a lot of the conversation is, is it a full rebuild? Is this going to try to be a quick reload where you're going to trade Eichel and try to convince Marner to sign long-term and then get these new pieces and try to get running again here quickly? Or are you going to trade Risto, Eichel, and Reinhart and start over and then rely on Cousins and Mittelstadt and these guys you get back and these top picks to kind of, in a sense, do this all over again? And it's, we don't know. And I think that's going to be tough selling to the fan base if you're going through a full reload, full restart, I mean, and starting from the bottom. I mean, they're already at the bottom, but in a sense, starting all over again. And,
right,
you know, this market, you know, is a great hockey market, but if you look at some of the numbers from last season, it should be alarming to them. You know, the TV ratings were down, I believe, 35% in this local market alone. That is scary. And then they also, when they were able to have fans in their building, they couldn't sell out tickets. And that was like just 1,200 fans, 2,000 fans. They only had a few games with fans in the seats because they couldn't have any more because they couldn't sell tickets to the game. People weren't buying them and going. And that's at 2,000. So imagine when you have full capacity of trying to get 16,000 people in there. I mean, if they don't set a plan, don't get people to buy in, I mean, you're going to be looking at some bleak, bleak pictures of that arena next year. I mean, you're looking at, like, you know, sorry to pick on Florida, but you're gonna be looking at situations like we see in Florida when you're gonna have 7,000-8,000 fans in there because people just aren't doing it anymore. People are not buying in, they're not taking, you know, the selling pitch anymore. and just they're just fed up, and it's going to hurt the owner's pocket next year, especially for a league and probably a team that needs to sell tickets to kind of win back some of that money,
right,
that they lost from COVID. It's a really rough situation.
Good. Good. I don't blame the fans at all. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't be burning my hard-earned money on whatever the hell that team this past season was either. Sure. So it's very justified. And I think Sabres fans are awesome. I enjoy interacting with them on Twitter, and I think they're as passionate as it gets. So they certainly definitely deserve passionate better
groups though.
Yes. All right. Well, let's get into, I feel like we've kind of done a lot of the heavy lifting here in terms of setting the scene. Now we can kind of get into the meat of this and actually discuss some of the teams that would be interested, the fits for Eichel there, and also what the Sabres would be targeting from them. So, I know you've been doing this over the weeks on your website in terms of, kind of working your way through the teams. So let's start with the Ducks, I guess, because it feels like they're the most, they're the spot that he's linked to the most right now. And it seems like that's on the most likely outcome. But we'll work through all of them, and especially some kind of out of left field ones as well. But let's start with the Ducks. Where do you want to take this one? You can talk about players they should be targeting, any which way you want to take it.
So here's the situation with the Ducks. I think that a lot of people, particularly Sabres fans, look at the Ducks and go, I need to get one of Zegras or Drysdale. It's more specifically Zegras, or it's a complete failure. I'm not there. I think you can build a package from the Ducks without those two guys in it, but that means it's going to cost the Ducks more. So from people I've talked to, it seems like the Ducks would prefer not to include Zegras or Drysdale. Maybe that's a situation now the Sabres are trying to push on them to get one of them out of there. I think this trade is definitely going, if it happens to Anaheim, it's definitely going to include third overall. It seems like people I talked to that Max Comtois is probably going to be a part of it, but I wouldn't say the 100%. So there, those are your main two pieces there. And then it's what you build beyond there. I wrote an article today where I broke it down into tiers, tier one, tier two, tier three. From tier one is Zegras, Drysdale, third overall. You pick one of those. Let's say third overall. Tier two then becomes Comtois, Gibson, Sam's, Steele, Jones. I think, speaking of picking the wrong players, I think Steele and Jones are kind of the two, I guess you could say, landmines in here. Those are the two players I would try to avoid, but I could see the Sabres having interest in those guys, and that kind of scares me.
Right.
And then your third tier is, you got a prospect, Jacob Perreault, Lucas Dostal, Jackson Lacombe, Henry Thrun, or any other one of those prospects. You pick one of those guys, and then you kind of have your package. I think the wild card in here is John Gibson and all of this. It doesn't make sense, especially for the Ducks more, but even the Sabres, they're rebuilding, why they would do that. But Adams, from my information, has been after him for about a year. And his name, Gibson, has been involved in these talks. Now, I don't know if that means he'll be in this deal, but they've had conversations about it. And it's just, it's interesting because if they do get Gibson, then that gives the idea that they're going to try to turn this around quickly, where from an Anaheim standpoint, I don't understand why they would do that unless they know they have another goalie in their back pocket that could send as a free agent. Maybe it's Freddie Anderson comes back to Anaheim. I don't know, but I don't get it from Anaheim's perspective why they would do it, but his name is there still.
Yeah. That's tough to reconcile. Cause you figure if you're acquiring Jack Oakley, you're going to at least try to compete for a playoff spot next season. Right. And you'd figure the roadmap to that would involve John Gibson being what he was before the previous two seasons in terms of his performance. Now, I've also seen people say like, oh, to help make the money work, you can throw in Gibson as a cap dump. And I know his past two seasons, the numbers aren't good, even if you're, whether you're looking at the raw save percentage or the goal save above expected.
Yep.
I think there's a lot going on there because in each of those two seasons, he started off remarkably well and looked great. And I feel like as the year went along, you could kind of like feel his soul being ripped out of his body, playing behind this dreadful team.
Yeah. And I mean, looking at it the last 2 years, when I looked yesterday on Evolving Hockey site, he's faced the third highest shot quality against in all situations in the last 2 years. Yeah. You just get tired. And like you said, just it gets exhausting and just sucks the soul out of you.
Yeah. And he does have 6 years left on his deal. It's at $6.4 million, which isn't outrageously high for his age, 28 through 33 years. It doesn't really seem to make sense if you're the Sabres, unless you are trying to turn this thing around quickly or potentially flipping him to a team that'll give you future assets, whether it would be an Edmonton or a Carolina or someone like that. So that would be interesting. But yeah, I would think that if you were identifying a goalie, and I'm not necessarily sure why you necessarily would in a trade like this, but I think like Lucas Dostal makes a lot more sense in terms of the timelines for the two teams. For sure. So I would be going that route. I really can't comprehend a scenario where the Ducks would give up Zegras in this trade. I understand you need to give up something really good to get a player of Jack Eichel's caliber. I just think that would be a very negligent move on Bob Murray's part, but you're right. I think he seems very desperate to get the Ducks at least relevant again. And that makes him a good GM to be targeting for trades like this, because if there's anyone that's going to push in a bunch of future chips to get a player that can help them right now, it seems like it would be them. So yeah, I think you certainly have to get at least one of those premium assets. I'm not even sure that beyond Zegras, that third overall or Drysdale would be enough on its own. But if you're lumping them together with a bunch of other stuff, like you said, then it does become interesting.
Yeah. I mean, quickly before we get off the Ducks, I mean, if you want to talk about negligent, I put it on Twitter yesterday and I'll clarify myself again today. If I'm running the Ducks, I'm nowhere near this trade with Eichel. I don't think it lines up with their timeline. I think it sets them off to be the Sabres West. I mean, you're going to trade key assets, even if it's Gibson and Comtois, off your team. And you're going to have guys like Raquel and Mason and Lindholm all on 1 year deals. And, you know, you're going to give away a third overall pick. And just, it smells exactly like the Sabres situation all over again.
I think it's
dangerous.
I think if you're not giving away Zegras or Drysdale, I can talk myself into it. I do think the question of what the ultimate end game is in terms of where it's going to get you is a very fair one, because like this Ducks team was really, really bad last year. I watching the games, I honestly thought they were maybe the most hapless team I watched all year. 41.2% goal share, just slightly better than the Sabres, who lost 18 games in a row, by the way. A 45% expected goal share. Like they were really, really bad. And yeah, if you get Jack Eichel, you add him, you hope to get better goalie performance. Some of these young guys do develop. You can certainly see a path, especially in that weak division of theirs next year, but it's very risky for me in terms of if you're going to just move in all of your future assets that you would need to surround a Jack Eichel. To do so now seems like you're really not lining up your timelines in terms of trying to actually strike a competitive window. So it's a big issue. Like I said, if you can make it happen without giving away your two best young players, then that's something you certainly have to entertain.
For sure. Absolutely.
All right. I'll give you my favorite one. Cause the Ducks one is just so strange to me. I keep coming back to the Hurricanes here.
Yeah. Yes.
First off, they have so many forward prospects to choose from. If you're the Sabres, I do think that Seth Jarvis would be the gem there, but whether it's Ryan Suzuki or Patrick Pistola or Jack Drury or Dominic Bach or Jameson Rees, like they've done such a good job of drafting and stockpiling assets over the past couple of years that you can get a number of those guys to go along with a first or what have you. You can help, make it happen by potentially taking on Jay Gardner's contract with, I think, 2 years left at 4 point something per or whatever, and kind of help make the money work in that regard. I think what's interesting here from the Canes perspective for me is if you get a Jack Eichel, all of a sudden, you know, you've got Aho down the middle already. You've got Stahl for two more years. You've got Trocheck next year as well. You can really experiment there. I just think it does such it gives them, I guess, such a massive room to elevate their ceiling as a team that I think it's something you certainly have to entertain. And it seems like they have the pieces to do so. So I'm kind of curious. It seems like, at least from the reputable sources, they haven't caught on too much traction in terms of like being linked to this trade, which strikes me as odd, but it seems like the pieces for both sides would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's, it really would set Carolina up to finally make that run or get over that hump in that conference. They would be maybe one of the best center groups on the middle in the league if they add Eichel. Now, the question is, especially coming from an owner who just had a money, maybe a battle in a way with the head coach who just won the Jack Adams Award, does the owner want to pay a $10 million player? Where does Dougie Hamilton come into this then? If they acquire Eichel, is he definitely out the door? Do they want him back? I think there's a lot of assets, like you said, Jarvis. They can include their first round pick, but then it's a late first round pick. So then what else do the Sabres want? Do they want a roster player too? You know, is that a Warren Fogle? Is that an HS or, you know, somebody else off that roster too? And does Carolina want to do that? But it really feels like Carolina has to do something, because if they're kind of like stuck in the mud here and they're just spinning their wheels, they keep getting to the same spot in the playoffs and can't get over the hump. So they have to do something here. That's, I think, the interesting part with Carolina.
Yeah, I think packaging together a number of those prospects and sort of consolidating it into one massive piece like Eichel makes a lot of sense. I forgot to mention on the Ducks, because you just brought it up in terms of how like late Carolina's theoretical first round pick would be. If I was making a trade with the Ducks for Eichel here, I would be trying to get future firsts.
Oh, about the 2022 first round pick as well.
Yes, because I think you could easily talk them into being like, "Oh, you're going to get Jack Eichel. You're going to be good next year. Don't worry about it." And yes. I just beyond the, who knows what his next going to be like. But also, I'm not sure even a healthy Jack Eichel makes that team actually very good, considering all the pieces that would be around him. So that would be, we don't really see NHL teams make those. Like, it seems like more of an NBA thing when you see these superstar trades where you're like, "All right, we're going to get, you know, your 2023, 2025, 2027, and 2029 first rounders, and then all these pick swaps in the other years." But that would be a trade that I would be very interested in. But who knows if there's an appetite to do so if you're the Sabres, because that's not something that necessarily helps you sell tickets next season.
Yeah, your big return isn't here. Like, oh, we're going to get it next year. Like, that's tough sell.
It is. I think the Hurricanes, I was looking at it, I think what would be appealing for them here as well is they really, because of the way a lot of their contracts are structured, like pretty much everyone comes off the books within the next 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So if they wanted to, I think they could potentially even retain Dougie, bring in Jack Eichel. If they got off of Jake Gardner's contract and maybe one more, and that would obviously sweeten the pot for the Sabres in terms of the assets they were getting back. But then they could like get creative with like maybe bridging Svechnikov or something like that and making all the money work where you can retain all of these massive pieces for the next couple of years and really just try to win a cup over the next 3 seasons and then figure it out after that. So I don't think the money in the contract for Eichel is necessarily prohibitive in terms of like, all right, we're going to add Jack Eichel, but then we're going to have to bleed all these other assets over the next 2 years.
Yeah. For the other thing about Carolina too, I coming from a Sabres perspective, if I'm Kevin Adams, I want one of those pieces off your blue line. They'd be willing to move Pesci, you know, but if they're going to make a run, do they want to do that? Because they have their prospects too, but like we said, you're getting a late first round pick. So I want a roster player that's going to hurt, especially if Eichel's staying in the East. And that's a report even Friedman mentioned, the teams in the Eastern Conference kind of have figured out, well, it's going to cost more for us to acquire him than it would for the Ducks because he's out there out West. So that's why I think, you know, is Carolina willing to give up, you know, a defenseman like Pesci the Sabres might have interest in, that can be their new top guy for their situation moving forward.
I mean, I get it. In a way, I also think if you're the Sabres, you really need to worry about improving your own team. Over in terms of like the East-West thing, I get that it's embarrassing having to see him play against you, especially if it's a good team for a bunch of times every season. Like, I understand from a PR perspective, it's kind of a nightmare, but the only way that they're going to fix this from a PR perspective is by having a good team for once. And so they should just worry about getting the best players they can for themselves.
The only way I would increase the price tag, it would be an in-division team like Boston or Montreal.
Right.
Then I would make it more expensive for you, but Carolina, Columbus, even, you know, the Rangers, I would just because I'm spiteful. I would make the Rangers more expensive, but same thing. Like only your division, I think I would make them pay more, but just, you know, taking kind of in a way, taking the East completely out of it.
Right.
I think might not be the best approach either.
Okay. So we've done the Ducks and the Canes here, I think. who's next on your list in terms of most interesting fits slash teams that should be in on this?
Well, I think we have to talk about Columbus, right? Because they're the team that's next most connected besides the Ducks here. I mean, I can't figure out a trade that makes sense, but yet here they are, continue to be connected along with the Ducks. It's hard to figure out. I mean, I get it. They're going to trade Seth Jones. They have 3 first round picks. So they're going to have a lot of assets.
Right.
But I don't know.
Yeah, where does that get you?
Yeah, it's the same thing that falls into the Tuck situation is you get Eichel, but you give up all these assets and where are you? So, cool. I get it that they're trying to maybe sell a fan base in Columbus on, look, we got this guy now and he's here for 5 years. He can't leave us. Like everybody else appears to want to leave us. And then maybe you get some guys to stay there with you because you have Eichel. So I can get it from a Columbus standpoint, but and there's not a lot of high end prospects there and Sabres to pick from. So I just don't see how it makes sense from a Sabres standpoint, to deal with Columbus.
Yeah, it seems like a very Sabres-y thing to prioritize one of the 2 Blue Jackets goalies as like a premium piece in this trade. And if that is the case, I think that's a big time mistake. As much as I love Elvis, I just think it doesn't make sense from the Sabres perspective. And then also you factor in, we've talked about like, so Eichel, you acquire Eichel, and you do have him there for the next 5 years. Also, his no move clause kicks in next year. And all of a sudden, if he's unhappy, then he controls and has all leverage in terms of what you're going to do with him next. And you kind of locked yourself into another nightmare. Not that that should preclude you from trying to get good players. Like if you're Yarmo and the Blue Jackets, you need to figure out how to get good players and keep them. Yeah. And I'm sure winning helps with that. But it would be very risky. So that would be a strange one for me, but it would be very fitting to see like him linked to all these like California teams and stuff. And then all of a sudden he's just going to Columbus.
All right, let's go to a fun one. Yeah. I think this is a dark horse, really interesting idea, Colorado.
So funny enough, I had this one pitched to me by our mutual friend, Kevin, who is a great Twitter follow aside from his just truly horrendous Cole Caulfield takes. But
you got that in there.
I had to. They are interesting to me from the perspective of I don't necessarily see it because it just doesn't make sense from how we've seen them operate over the past couple of years in terms of like how reluctant they are to take on future financial commitments and how obsessed they are with keeping the financial flexibility that it's going to take once, you know, this summer, they're going to have to pay Makar and Landeskog and then McKinnon and so on and so forth. But the pieces are there because, you know, I think Newhook would certainly be a crown jewel here and probably one of the best young players that the Sabres could dream of getting from any of these teams. But then you could also, you know, you could throw in potentially Connor Timmins in there. You could obviously mess around with draft picks and stuff. But I like the idea of acquiring the last year of Nazem Kadri's deal and flipping him to a contender and getting other assets from that as well. So, and to help make the money work, obviously, so for both teams. So I think Colorado would be a fascinating one. And I love it from the perspective of having this fast skill team and falling short and just continuing to double and triple down on it by just getting as many fast skilled players as you can if you're them.
Yeah, I mean they have the pieces to do it. It's just if you know, can they pull it off? You know, I mean, if I'm not mistaken, I think McKinnon said he would take a sweetheart deal again if it meant them winning games. And you know, so that, I mean, that's out there. I mean, we'll see when the time comes for negotiating if that's really the case. He could just be saying that, but I think it makes sense. Again, it's a team that just can't, like Carolina, just can't get over the hump every year. Like, oh, this is Colorado's year. They just can never get over the hump. So yeah, you finally go out and you've acquired all these assets, all these prospects, you know, built a young group in there. And maybe this is the time they take that big swing. And it would be fascinating because that would be an absolute, a healthy Eichel with McKinnon and Rantanen and Makar and the rest of the pieces they have built around their team would be incredible to watch. But it's just, does Colorado, for the reasons you mentioned, want to take that big swing? And I don't know where Sakic's head at, if or if he's desperate enough to really make that push now.
Yeah, it's tricky because it's certainly like, I think, you know, different circumstances because he was older at the time, but like when Artemi Panarin became a free agent, they made a pretty healthy run at him, but they were very clear about limiting the term in terms of, you know, keeping the years down and just giving him a bunch of money over the next couple of years, but keeping those years, especially when MacKinnon comes up for a new contract, as clear as they can. And, you know, the $10 million cap hit for Eichel would certainly complicate matters, but I guess if you're them, you could potentially hope that, you know, 3 years down the line, let's say maybe the cap does finally start to go up a little bit, or you can figure it out after. I mean, heck, if you win a cup between now and then, I'm sure you take that as an outcome if you're them. So yeah, that would probably be the most fun outcome, I think, for both sides, because I think Buffalo could probably get the best combination of young players from Colorado in a trade like that. And obviously seeing him in that system and with the talent around him would be really fun from an entertainment perspective. So I like that one. I like that one a lot. I got a couple others here. I think the Wild are interesting to me because they so desperately need help down the middle, and it would make sense. And they do have some young pieces to make it happen. Mm-hmm. I thought about them a lot.
Until
their cap sheet is an absolute nightmare.
Yeah. In the Kaprizov situation, I wonder how much that changes for them. That they have to figure out what's going to happen there. Like if he goes back to Russia, like,
I mean, they also said, I don't think that's going to happen, but
I don't think it is either, but
here's the thing. They have six players with $6+ million cap hits moving forward. And it doesn't include their three best forwards who they have to sign this summer.
Yes. Yeah.
So
are you going to get Parise to waive to go to Buffalo? Like, I don't know. I mean, the interesting part for me in a Minnesota trade is you take Matt Dumba back and flip him to somebody for more assets.
Yeah,
that would almost have to happen.
Even Brodin potentially. That would be very interesting. And certainly, like, Jack Eichel's going to make every team that he goes to better. But like, they're one of the few teams here where, you know, all of our concerns about the Ducks and the Blue Jackets in terms of, okay, you acquire them and then what? Like the Wild can make this trade, assuming they can make the money work while still having like a defensive system, but also talent on the wing around him. So it's not just starting from scratch with Jack Eichel and nothing else. So that's part of what's interesting to me, especially after watching Kaprizov just lug around Victor Rask all season as his number one center. Like just the idea of like, all right, now we have Jack Eichel and Joel Eriksson-Ek as our top two centers. Like that's pretty awesome. I think that will take you pretty far if you're a team. So that's all of a sudden very interesting to me.
Yeah, definitely. And it'll be interesting who, I mean, the main prospect coming back would have to be one of Boldy or Rossi. It'd be interesting who the Sabres would prefer. I mean, because this was a team that just passed on Rossi. And then also that COVID condition too. I wonder how they see that. I mean, I think he'll recover and be fine, but you know, the Sabres medical team also scares me to put players around who might have some sort of medical situation. So they might lean Boldy, which is fine. I think Boldy is a great prospect too. And then if, you know, you can get Dumba and flip him a first round pick, and you know, Kalen Addison's a guy I've thought about out of there too, as a defense prospect, and they have some more pieces there too. So yeah, I think Minnesota is definitely an interesting team and a dark horse, but I'm surprised they're not connected a little bit more from the main people. And even myself, I haven't heard a lot about Minnesota, but you know, they can play the quiet game too.
Well, yeah, I think Wild fans have certainly been eyeing this for a while. But yeah, it seems like they have a lot of stuff internally to figure out this offseason in terms of the contracts they're going to give out. It's interesting. We've mentioned a bunch of teams. We haven't really talked about the Kings and the Rangers yet, who seemed like out of the gate would be the two obvious landing spots. And, you know, probably at the top of his own personal list in terms of where he'd prefer to go.
Right.
And I'm not sure how much to buy into all the reports about the Kings reportedly looking elsewhere and identifying something else, and whether that's just a leverage player, whether it's actually true, because they, even if you don't include Byfield, they have so many, similar to the Canes, they have such a wealth of forward prospects that you could put together a very, you know, tantalizing package for the Sabres without including your best forward prospect there. And from the Rangers' perspective, I think there's certainly, you know, their front office shakeup as the season ended indicates that they're going to be looking to be pretty aggressive here. They seem like a very natural landing spot. And I wonder, it seems like they're going to be at least, you know, wishfully looking from afar and waiting to see what happens with Sasha Barkov as he enters the last year of his deal here. But I don't think that necessarily precludes them from going after both players, or at least keeping the door open for it, just because of the way, you know, their salaries are structured right now and how much money they have coming off the books after the season and all that. So, yeah, I don't know. Do you think either of those two teams, I mean, obviously they make sense because they've been linked to him, but it seems like once this started, they were the obvious ones. And then as the life cycle of these rumors has gone along, they've kind of faded to the background a little bit.
Yeah. So LA is tough because they make a ton of sense, but everybody I've asked, and I know a few Kings people tell me like, yeah, they've heard the same thing as John. I've even talked to John too over in the mayor about it. And he's adamant. Yeah. I mean, that they're not interested in Michael. They have other plans. One of those other plans that I think does include Sam Reinhart. So I don't think they're out of Sabres, you know, guys completely, but I don't know. Like the part of me is like, I don't want to buy it, but everybody asks keeps telling me, no, they're not in it. And the main guys aren't saying that they're in it really. I mean, some have saying that they're lying, but I don't know if the Kings pull this off, it'll be one of the great heists. I think Angel team has pulled off how they fooled everybody and do it. So I guess for now though, I'll say that, yeah, it seems like LA is out of it. And then it seems like things have cooled with the Rangers. There's just no talk. And it's not even from insiders. I mean, this is New York City for God's sakes. And you're not even hearing the New York reporters really talk about it. So that's why I think with the GM change there with Drury, it's not so much that he wouldn't be interested in Eichel. I just think Drury has other plans, you know, and maybe they just realize they don't either want to pay or give up the guys it would cost to get Eichel. So they've already, in a sense, I'm sure they've checked in, but they may have moved on already hearing what the price tag would be and what it would cost them to acquire him.
Yeah, that would make sense. I was blown away seeing the recent, you know, gaining of steam for the Chicago Blackhawks to be part of this. Like I
don't get it. I don't know how they could do it from a cap perspective. I mean, I guess
maybe if you feel like Taves isn't going to come back. Yeah.
Right. But even like the assets, it's Doc and
11th,
first round pick. And then what else you got for me there? You know?
Well, I think that would be, I mean, I like Kirby Doc a lot. I think that would be very interesting if you're the Sabres.
For sure. But again, it gets to the same point, the same conversation of Anaheim and Columbus. Okay, you just traded your young second line center. What do you have there now? Like Dylan Strome, is that going to be the guy who's going to be behind Eichel? Like, I mean, it'd be interesting from a story perspective that, you know, those guys went 1-3, but, or I'm sorry, 2-3, but I don't know. that team is just not that good. You know, it's really just Patrick Kane, and that becomes a one line team. Are you going to play Kane and Eichel together? That'll be electric. What about the rest of your team? It's, you know, the Sabre situation we talked about at the beginning of the podcast. What about the other 40 minutes of the game? What's going to happen? You know, I think you'll get crushed. The goaltending situation is up in the air. The blue line there is up in the air too. Yeah, they have some young pieces there, but still, there's just too much up in the air. And I get it. It's Chicago, so maybe they kind of feel like they have to get involved, but I just can't really figure out a realistic trade that makes sense for the Sabres at this point.
Yeah. What about the Knights? How are you feeling about that? Because
yeah,
I keep coming back to them as like, if there's one team that's going to find a way to make it work, it's going to be them. But
I think it depends if they can get by Montreal or not. I think if they fall short to Montreal, they'll be more apt to make a run at them. But if they get to the finals,
I feel like they're the way they operate. They could win the cup and they could still just be like, all right,
cap not exist in Vegas though? Like for real? Like
I know.
I don't
crazy.
Know how they would make it work with the money.
I don't get it either. Like interestingly, I think they do have the assets to make an interesting
they definitely do
package of stuff, but yeah, it would involve, I guess, moving pieces that Buffalo would then flip to a third team.
The problem is too, they've given everyone that team no movement clause and new trade clauses. So who's going to wave to go to Buffalo so they can be flipped again?
Yeah.
Logically it makes sense. They have the pieces and they like to be in the big names. I mean, we've seen a Pacioretty, Pietrangelo. They're even trying to get Taylor Hall at the trade deadline. But at that point, Boston kind of already was in there. So they like to chase the big names. They'll do it. It's just, I can't figure out logically with the no move clause for the money guys, they'd have to move out, and just the salary cap, how they would make that work unless somebody pulls Nikita Kucherov and is hurt until the playoffs or something. I don't see any way, shape, or form that could work.
Yeah. Which is why it's going to happen.
Right.
Right. All right. I think we covered all the big stuff, right? Like, was there anything else that we wanted to mention?
I think we covered the fun teams and potentially the boring teams and then the most logical teams too. So I think we touched on all areas of this for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, Chad, this was a blast, man. I'm glad we got to do this. I'm really curious to see what's going to happen here. It does feel like it's going to happen sooner rather than later. So I'm glad that we got to do this while we still could. Plug some stuff. What are you working on? Where can people check out your work? Give us all that good stuff.
Yeah. So Expected Buffalo is my site, expectedbuffalo.com. Right now we are, because the guy I work with he's coming back soon. He just had a new baby. So I made him go on baby hiatus until the beginning of July, but Anthony will be back soon. So we'll get in some free agency stuff. We'll be all over the Eichel stuff. Eichel content seems to be a big seller right now for the people. So we'll keep pushing that out because people are eating it up until that happens. And then it moves to Reinhardt and Ristolainen. And then kind of where this team,
that's amazing.
Yeah. I think something we didn't touch on, which is funny. I don't want to go backwards now, but we really didn't talk about that. There's a team out there that's trying to get Eichel and Ristolainen, and the hilarity of Eichel being traded, but has to take the big guy with him is pretty funny.
Oh my God.
Jeez. But yeah. Anyways, that's where you can find me. ExpressiveBuffalo.com, at CMD to Minutes on Twitter. I won't spell it. I'm sure Dimitri will tag me so you can.
Yes. Yeah, we'll do that. And we'll have you back on, definitely. Maybe after the Eichel trade does happen, we'll do like a mini emergency breakdown or something like that.
For sure. So we didn't miss that aspect with Ristolainen. That's pretty funny.
That is pretty funny. All right, man. This was a blast. We will check in with you sometime soon. Enjoy this little calm before the storm. I'm sure it's going to be a busy offseason. I'm looking forward to covering with you down the road.
All right, man. Thanks. I appreciate it. Cheers.
Follow on Twitter at Dim Filipovich and on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/hockeypediocast.